Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony DeSalle.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony DeSalle.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony DeSalle.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, I think it's fair to say that this is going to be a very lively show, maybe the liveliest show that we've ever had. On Jaguars This Week, four men in here, two former players, two members of the media, an entire Mellow Mushroom Pizza. How did you get away from that?
Well, we hope that Baselli's not a former broadcaster after the show.
He's got distinct thoughts. Surely you do as well. And I'm sure that your inbox in the ozone was on fire, maybe at least smoldering this morning when you got here.
Why?
Right.
Did something happen? Did I miss something yesterday?
Yeah, exactly. And if you go,
all I know is we had a luncheon. What happened after that?
I didn't see. Were you at the luncheon?
I was,
because I was there too, and I didn't see you in that crowd. How come you didn't come up on stage?
I wasn't invited. No, I'm joking. Yeah, I had to leave for a meeting. Okay. I had a meeting that I had to run out for.
And, that wouldn't put fuel on this fire, would it?
That'd be good to have him come in.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
But I had to sneak out of there. I was there at the very beginning, and then snuck out to a meeting I had.
Okay. So here's a headline from ProFootballTalk.com, and it says, Garrard blames himself, comma, Del Rio regrets timing of decision. Let's let it go. Time to pull the cork out of the bottle on this, because obviously
where do you want to start? Biggest question is, do you want to start with the football move? Was it the right football move? You want to talk about the timing of the football move, or do you want to talk about the execution of how David Garrard was treated? Because each one of those is a separate conversation. Right.
Well, then let's deal with the football move. I haven't heard, honestly, Logs, that many people question the wisdom of the football move.
I would question it from the standpoint of making the decision on Tuesday afternoon. And I'll say this. I said it yesterday. I'm not saying we're any worse off with Luke McCown as the quarterback. I'm not going to make that argument. But to say that the lack of production – and the performance of David Garrard was just on him in the preseason is false. I watched this team. We talked about it. I'm an offensive lineman. I protect the big guys as much as anybody. But they were atrocious. And 70 to 80% of the time, David is picking himself up, getting hit, getting knocked around, getting knocked off his space. It is hard to play quarterback in this league when you're clean. It is very difficult if you're getting knocked around. And so I don't think we're any worse. But the question I wrestle with in the conversations I have had is, right or wrong football move, you make it Tuesday. What changed from Saturday? What changed from Thursday night after the last preseason game? I know Gene Smith is a tireless worker. He watches the game right afterwards. The coaches evaluated it Friday morning. What changed from that point to Tuesday afternoon, to Tuesday morning when the decision was made to cut him?
A very bad practice Monday was the final straw.
So I go there.
Sure.
That's a great – and I know that's the statement. So are we saying that David would be here if he had a good practice? The guy's – this is his 10th year, and we're going to pin it on one practice, and the decision was made because he played terrible? Guess is –
you're not – and then here's the thing.
That's the body of work, isn't it?
You know, we really don't know exactly what went into the decision-making process, but the one thing that I thought of when – I heard about it, which was obviously Tuesday,
right,
was they don't have to guarantee anything for a veteran player until Tuesday at 4 o'clock, right?
Yep.
So my thought was, well, they wanted to release him maybe on Saturday, and we're trying to work a trade or a pay cut.
You know, phones are ringing.
Something of that nature, because, you know, as a general manager, you don't want to part ways with a guy if he's got some type of value. And I don't know if that was ever pursued or not. I don't know. But that kind of when I
he
first
was due to make $8 million, so a trade was going to be tough.
Well, exactly.
Right.
So, I mean, but you never know.
Sure.
I mean, you never know. And then on top of that, if you could get him to take a pay cut, even if he's not going to be your guy, maybe he stays on the roster. I don't know.
Well, there was no word of pay cut, because we were told that no pay cut was offered. And we were also been told that it was because of Monday's practice, and at least the rumor going around, and I don't know if it's been confirmed or not, is that this was Jack Del Rio's decision after practice on Monday that he could not win with David Garrard as his quarterback. I just want to know what changed We had 5 weeks of preseason, Jeff. The valuation, and listen, I'm not saying David won. If they would have cut him Friday morning or Saturday, I said, okay, I understand that. They would have cut him after the third preseason game.
So we're still just talking about the timing. We're not talking about the football decision.
Yes, we are talking about the football decision because the football decision
greatly
affects.
Tony is from the timing standpoint if Monday's practice impacted it. But I do know this. If you took the preseason and evaluated, if you forgot anything that any of those three quarterbacks had done prior to the start of training camp, and you just graded them on that, you could say that David did not have a great camp.
Agree.
But I thought that they would take into account what he had done in the past and say, okay, hey, look, he's just got to get it going. And he didn't get it going. So if you just looked at this window, close your eyes to everything else, you can understand the decision that was made. And none of us are disagreeing with the move. I think that's pretty clear. But I think all of us are saying, Could have been handled better, And I think, from a former player's standpoint, I would have liked to have seen David not go to a luncheon,
right?
And then
introduced as your starting quarterback,
and just go there and say that
I blame you
that David was unable to make it,
right?
Leave it at that, and then afterwards, make your announcement. Hey, we're going to have a press conference. Let the media kind of dwell and think and speculate all they want. It doesn't matter.
Frankly, who cares about
it? Because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
To me, at that point, it didn't matter.
And isn't treating,
the flip side of it is you're getting beat on by them now. You might have just let them know earlier.
Either way, knowing, letting them know earlier, or kind of
done it before.
Right.
Isn't the respecting of the player, at some point, just forget the player, and I'm with Jeff as an ex-player, he's a human being. My goodness, it's the right way to handle a situation where a guy, this is his livelihood, this is what he is.
It's never a good situation.
But it's much worse if you bring him out in front of the entire community.
Could have been better.
It just could have handled much better. And I don't think anybody recognized that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's pretty clear.
Nobody in the organization would say that was handled well.
No, and I agree. And it's just frustrating.
Jack said it today publicly, give him credit for that.
You just don't get it back. That's the frustrating part.
Right. How long does it linger, though?
It depends. If they win this week, I got it. As I told someone today, I said, listen, winning cures all. And nobody – let me ask you a question. The national media was pretty – got on Jack and everyone when they let go Byron the last minute and went with David. I don't think it was as big a surprise because David was clearly the backup, clearly a guy who played a lot in the preseason, where Luke played zero in the third preseason, no reps with the ones barely except for the last – preseason game, but they got beat up pretty good about making a last-minute decision like this. How could you do this? What does it say about the franchise? They started winning. They go on a good run. It's a good team. Nobody was questioning. In fact, they were hailed.
Except for Byron.
They were hailed as risk-takers.
Right.
As gutsy. And so if they win, they will be hailed once again as making the right decision. Smart football. Maybe not the best timing, but realizing they needed to make a change. And so that right there, it comes. If they lose, they're going to continue to get filleted. That's the way it goes.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's take our first break. We'll come back. Phone lines are starting to light up, as you can imagine. At Tony Boselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. You call Loggy at 355-NFL-1. It's going to be a weird show, folks. Glad you're along for the ride on News Talk, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, rolling right along here. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna on News Talk, WOKV. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Boselli, Jeff Loggeman, and Joe Fortunato. And do you, any more statements to make before we go to the phones? Because, this is just going to dominate at least the first hour.
Well, I think Jeff and I agree that as former players you're disappointed, but it's a nasty part of the business. Even if they would have done it perfectly, there probably have been hurt feelings. You never like that. I think the biggest question I have, and I don't want to put words in anyone else's mouth, is the timing. What changed from Saturday? I could have the football move, I get. You got to make calls you think are going to help you win football games. And if Gene Smith and Jack Del Rio think this is going to help them win football games, I'm all for it. I just don't understand. And I guess I one practice.
It can't be one practice.
Can't be that. I mean, it just can't be, Jeff.
All
the times I kicked your butt, you'd be cut so many times
what?
In one practice. You would have never made a game.
I think
that's the reason you played well in games is because I dominated you during the week.
But I think they just kept waiting and waiting.
But,
to see something from Dave.
You've been around long enough. One practice?
No, it can't have been that.
But
I think what John is saying is that it must not have been a very solid decision when they made it. And it might have been, because we don't know what they're thinking.
We don't know.
But it might have been a case where they made it and they thought, man, this is not the right move. This is not what we want to do.
Yeah.
But the coach wants David, and the coach is on the hot seat this year. The owner put him there at the end of last year. And so all of a sudden now, they got to Monday, they have a bad practice, and it just reconfirms the thought that wasn't the right move. Are we going to avoid making what they think is the right move just so that everybody's not mad at them?
The final straw was the words used today, and that's, as probably the best explanation we're going to get.
No, and I'm fine with that. Listen, we don't need to know everything that goes on. I mean, there's meetings that happen behind closed doors, and that's part of the business, and I get that. Just being around long enough,
right.
It's never Monday's practice. It's never one practice. It's never he threw three picks and we woke up and said we can't win with them.
No, but we're just not going to know. We're not going to know.
Right.
So 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Dave starts us out in St. Augustine. Dave, welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I'm only hearing this being given from one point of view, which is we waited too long to cut him, okay? So let's eliminate the bad guy persona from this and look at it like this. We waited till the last second for him to win the job. I've always been a David Garrard fan. I'm a David Garrard supporter and defender because that's what you got to be basically to be a David Garrard fan. All he had to do was win the job from a journeyman and a rookie, and he did not do that. And in the face of that challenge, did he not only not do that, he in fact regressed. Okay, so I mean, the Jaguars, Gene Smith, Jack Del Rio, from my point of view, without a doubt, gave David Garrard every opportunity to do something, anything, and he did nothing, and he, in fact, got worse. And so, hold on, let me talk about the offensive line. If you're David Garrard and you're playing quarterback,
he could hear you approaching the mic, Buscelli.
You don't have Maurice Jones-Drew in the backfield. So that defense in that preseason does not have to respect the run whatsoever, and they're just going to load up on you.
You're wrong.
That's a liability. That's a liability in David Garrard's game. It always has been. It always will be. He doesn't have the best passing prowess.
You're wrong.
So
hold on now.
Let
me just interrupt you before you have to go any further and listen. We got to listen to any more because that's not accurate. And I'll take it from an offensive line's perspective. My job is to block the defensive end, whether Maurice Jones-Drew's back there or some rookie free agent that's never played. It does not affect the good. I'm not talking about great offensive linemen or great offensive line. Their job is to protect the quarterback. Doesn't matter who's back there. We didn't protect the quarterback. I don't think anybody could turn on the film and say, we gave David a lot of time. That is not David's fault. He might hold the ball at times, and I've been on him, and we've all talked about that, make quicker decisions. I didn't see that during the preseason.
Buffalo, he had time.
Okay, Buffalo. Well, everybody has time against Buffalo. I mean, the four of us.
Not to break your momentum, but.
But you know what I'm saying, Jeff. You look at Atlanta and St.
Rams,
Louis.
Yeah.
Did he have any time at all?
No, he was under
duress. He was harassed the whole time. So I don't buy. I mean, it's not Maurice Jones-Drew. It's not. I don't care who you have back there. As an offensive lineman, listen, I love the big guys. I'm fighting for them. But you got to do your job. Your job is to block.
But I do, Dave, I do like your perspective. And that they gave him every chance.
That's a fair comment.
And that's a good perspective to have.
I'm okay with that.
And Tony doesn't like it.
I like that part. I don't like the fact. I mean, if the guy gets hit, that's not his fault. If he's getting hit and he doesn't have time to throw the ball.
But you didn't like the fact that, all the way to Monday, come down one day. And I'm okay with that. But I do like Dave's perspective in that they gave him every opportunity. And I'm okay with either way. I really am.
Jeff, are you, though, as a player? I mean, going into a game week, the focus needs to be on Tony, I'm not even talking about when or how, the luncheon. The focus has to be on playing the Tennessee Titans. I mean, don't you want to know who you're going with?
I agree with you. I agree with you that, you've got to be able to make a decision. You can't let one day kind of sway you. I understand that. But I also understand that – everything can be a cumulative effect.
Sure, I agree.
And sometimes, you know, you kind of are on the fence, like John was saying, and you have a practice like that, and it's not particularly good. Hey, look, the reality is that the numbers weren't great in the preseason. He wasn't great. My whole philosophy on this was is that, hey, somebody needs to be the quarterback, and I was expecting it to be David, to allow Blaine Gabbert time to be the man. But then also at the end of the day on Tuesday, you're going to pay a guy you don't feel real strongly about $8 million to not be a starter? You know,
No. If he's not your starter, I get that.
You know, my biggest complaint is that, you know, and it's, you know, it's my complaint, is that I just wish that on yesterday he didn't go to that convention center.
That's it.
That's my complaint.
I don't have a problem.
That's it.
You're right.
I would take it a step further.
Because I don't know everything else, okay? I don't know, you know, what the decisions were over the weekend and then what led to the decision on Tuesday. I didn't like that he went to that event. And then short time later, he's told he's gone.
And from what I understand, I was not there, but there was some media that talked to David today. And the gist of what I've seen so far that he said was basically that, you know, he sort of admitted he brought it on himself, didn't play very well.
No, he didn't.
Had only himself to blame, I think, was the quote that I saw.
Yes,
you know, Tanya had. And, you know, he said, the only thing I wish had been done differently was I wish, you know, the luncheon part had been done differently.
Yeah.
And I think everybody's in agreement on that. I mean, sometimes you blow it. And I think the Jaguars did on this one, on that aspect of it. And, you know, you've got to, you know, sort of right that ship and move on.
The only thing I'll disagree with a little bit, the timing, I mean, I agree with you. I, as a offensive player in a locker room getting ready to go play, the quarterback is the most important position on the team.
That's overrated.
No, you're wrong.
I'm just kidding.
I'm like, come on. I mean, I understand.
I can't take it just for the sake of arguing.
And that is a position that if you're going to make a major change like that, it ripples, especially across the locker room, I mean, in the offensive side, because that's who you're going to battle with. I mean, that is your leader. That's the guy you're fighting for.
They didn't even vote him a captain. Doesn't that matter to you at all? You're talking about the quarterback. If he's the leader, he's not even a captain.
Mark wasn't a captain.
Mark was never, I mean, but Tom appointed those.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a different
deal. Voted.
Yeah, but if it was a player vote, Tony, you would have been the captain over Mark.
And that's fine.
Everybody knew that.
We were just talking about leadership.
But even if there's another leader on the offense, that's your guy. I mean, that's the guy you're rallying around. That's the guy pulling the trigger. And all I'm saying is I'm fine with making the change. I'm not disagreeing with Jack or Gene that we might be better off with Luke. But are we better off with a guy that got limited reps in the preseason?
But you're thinking about 1 week. I mean, they're thinking about 1 month, you know, one half of the season.
Fair enough.
As a business guy,
my point is, as you're evaluating this, Brian, and you're evaluating this position, this is what they do 24/7. This is what they're looking at. I got to believe at some point during the five-week period, you looked at this and said, Luke McCown is better. Not only this preseason, he was better last preseason. We got to give this guy a chance to find out what he can do with the first unit.
Now, that's another argument. Why, he should have got more
point.
Time.
Why? That's where I get...
That's a totally different argument.
No, it's the same argument. That's the timing argument. That is the evaluation process of the team.
All right, we need to take a break. We've reached the news at the bottom of the hour, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. More to come after news here on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. All right, rolling right along here. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Emails, tweets, phone calls, you know how this one goes. Back to the phone lines, or do you want to keep... I did think that introducing the Luke McCown playing time in the preseason is a different element to the timing issue of it.
Well, I just think it's interesting, and it's ironic the whole time we were talking about, and even, I think, internally, it was David or Blaine. Is Blaine ready?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we come in the last preseason game. The conversation now, Luke is number two. Blaine's three.
Yeah, you let that cat out of the bag.
It was a production meeting. Usually at the production meeting, what you're doing is you're talking about what you're going to talk about at the game, unless the person you're talking to says, this is not for public consumption.
And now we have a new topic.
We can get into that later if we like, but... And then 5 days later or three, 4 days later, David's gone, Luke's number one, Blaine's number two. So it's just, it's puzzling. That's all.
All right.
Listen, obviously Jack and Gene and those guys spend a lot of time studying. Listen, I try. At the end of the day, I've told everybody, I might not understand it. I might disagree with it. Still a Jag fan. Still believe in Gene Smith. Still believe in the process. Still believe in this team that is being built for the long run.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. 355-NFL1. Scott is in Mandarin and up first in this half hour. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'll try to make this quick. You guys got all kinds of things you said about this, and everybody wants to talk a little bit. As a fan, I kind of lost some respect for Wayne Weaver and Gene Smith for the way this thing went down, and that was my comment to this. And the time that David was here, maybe he didn't win the games he wanted to do, but he did everything else the team wanted him to do. He was a good, patient backup. He did the best he could with what he had around him to as the starter. But to do what they did and wait till, you know, like you say, after this Tuesday luncheon, I mean, they knew after the last preseason game that they were going to do something. Now, maybe they were trying to do a trade in the background or whatever, but that's, again, more concern about them than trying to, you know, save face and try to do something right by David. He should have been released in a decent, respectful manner after serving a good time here in Jacksonville. He never embarrassed this team. It wasn't full of off-field or on-field shenanigans like some of these other players that you see getting cut loose this week, and you can understand it in those cases. But I really didn't expect this to come out of Wayne Weaver or Gene Smith. This I would have figured in Dallas or Oakland, but not in an organization like the Jaguars. I'll let you guys go, but that was my only comment.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, everybody's going to have their opinion, and I agree that David has been, I mean, the model player that you'd want to have for an organization. I mean, good guy, family guy, you know, works hard, you know, never in trouble, you know. So, yeah, I'm okay with that.
You know, for whatever it's worth, you learn from your mistakes. I mean, I don't think you're going to see this organization go down the – Al Davis, Jerry Jones road.
No. I mean, come on.
They'll
learn
from this
close.
Mistake and be able to move on from it. And I think you're right. If they win on Sunday, this goes away.
You know, and the one thing, though, that I'm sure that they would like to have that day back.
Sure.
You know, and I think that Wayne and Gene both really expressed in the press conference how much respect that they did have for David. And when you have something like that and you've never really had to do that before at that time. I mean, what experience do you draw upon to do it right? So I can understand, hey, they made a mistake. They understand it. And David is a good guy. You know, so it's time to move on.
And I don't think it's fair to compare Wayne Weaver or Gene Smith.
No.
Gene Smith is one of the most stand-up individuals I have ever met. I've known him since 1995. He is a guy who would die to do the right thing, and I promise you he would love to – I got to believe, and I haven't talked to him, he would love to do it over. It's not fair to compare those two guys to Al Davis or whoever. And it was a mistake. You get frustrated with mistakes, and I got to believe that it's a mistake that they'll learn from and move forward. And listen, you win, it covers all sins. I mean – winning is the great elixir in this league.
All right, Luke is – I'm sorry, not Luke. Jason's in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Jason. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate you guys taking my call. I'd just like to say I understand the decision to release David Garrard. I just believe that the clues were there. You know, if I were a detective, you know, I would say that there's probably some indicator that that was in the cards. Because if you look at, you know, just how things played out up into his release, you know, by not being chosen as a team captain, by just certain not starting him for the preseason, there were signs that if you put them all together.
See, I agree with you.
I disagree.
When you connect the dots.
See, I agree.
You know, it would appear seems like a person that may be on their way out.
Do you do with the dot that Jack Del Rio is saying he loves the quarterback position and David Garrard is his starter the day after the last preseason game and he has two great –
What do you do with the fact that for the first time in the preseason, Luke McCown goes into the ball game instead
second,
of Blaine Gabbert?
Second. What do you do with the fact that everything
that
we heard –
That was a clue, though.
No, everything we heard, everything that was said from the head coach is he – thinks the quarterback, quote-unquote, is a position of strength. that David is the starter. I mean, there's no clues. The fact that he's not a captain has nothing to do with Jack or Gene.
No,
that is a
player vote.
I mean, there's no clues. I mean, and anybody, and I know, Brian, people, like you have said in the past that we might be better off, and there's other people who said that we might move on. Nobody. You didn't wake up Monday morning.
No. I thought it was done.
The dots are connected.
No.
David Garrard's going to be cut. That is a ridiculous notion.
No, but as you look back, the fact that McCown went into the ball game second the other night, gave time with the ones, says something. Maybe they weren't certain of what they were going to do.
I disagree.
All right. Well, I agree with what you say.
It's so easy. I can look back on any event afterwards and say, oh, boy, I really can see them.
Well, that's what we're doing today.
We're evaluating what we saw. We're not saying there's a bunch of
time.
There's not time. You connected. The picture wasn't drawn.
Can I separate you two for a minute? Okay, neither one of you are Sherlock Holmes. Let's move on.
All right,
thank you.
Five,
I agree with
NFL
that. That's
one.
The best thing I've heard so far.
355-6351. There's more to come, Baselli. Just hang in there. David's on the west side. Hello, David.
Hey, I was wondering, why didn't we get something for David instead of just release him? And also stay in college prep football rules.
You can't.
What was that last thing?
He hung up, so
yeah,
I don't know.
I didn't understand that.
You couldn't get anything for him.
Man, I want to say this. It's impossible to trade a quarterback with a cap figure of 8 point whatever million.
Well,
slightly over $8 million.
Cash. That's what they owed him.
On a Monday before the open.
Right.
It's impossible.
You can't discount.
You just can't do it.
Yeah, I mean.
I'll tell you
this.
You
can try to trade. You can talk about the guy having fifth round value.
Tom Brady.
That part was mine.
Yeah. If it could have been done, the general manager, Gene Smith, would have found a way to get it done.
I agree.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351.
The only thing you could have done real quick is, Jeff, maybe if you thought far enough ahead, go to David, restructure his contract, and then trade him as a backup.
Yeah. If you thought far enough ahead.
Or restructure him and keep him here as your backup.
Let's grab Jay in Arlington next on the show. Hello, Jay.
Hi, how are you? Hey, I've been listening to you guys, and, you know, one of the things you said earlier about where it was a position of strength, my biggest problem is all I've heard the last couple of years is how great these young offensive tackles are. And I think half of Greg's problem all last year was he's just getting beat up by these guys, just getting beat constantly. And, now we've got a guy in the county who's prone to injury, and we got a rookie. I mean, how long before we're worried about what we're going to do at the quarterback position after somebody beats Eugene and hurts the quarterback? That's all I had to say.
Well, I'll before Tony kind of starts going off on the offensive line.
No, he soaks up a lot of the oxygen, doesn't he?
I have nothing to say on that topic.
He's highly critical of the offensive line. It's a group that's got to get better. And Eugene Monroe in particular has to get better. He's got a young player playing next to him. Eugene needs to be a bedrock of sorts for that left side. He hasn't been. The pressure's on him. He knows it. The challenge has been put on him by the coaching staff. And we'll see how it goes. He's got to respond. If this offense is going to be good, he has to be a better player.
And long term, that may be a bigger issue than the sexy issue of the quarterback right now.
355-NFL-1-800-355-6351. Clarence is in Callahan. Hello, Clarence. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Long time Jaguar fan. Just a quick thing. I think the way that they did David was wrong. I don't think it was right. I think it could have been done better. And secondly, I have nothing against McCown or Gabbert starting, but who are they going to throw to? I don't see where we got any receivers for them to throw to. And that's all I got to say. I have a good one.
Thank you, Clarence.
Yeah, thanks, Clarence. I think, Mike Thomas is a guy who had 60-plus catches last year.
66 and four
touchdowns. Cecil Shorts has production. You look like it. You like what you see. Mercedes Lewis is a guy who caught 50-plus balls, 10 touchdowns. But I'll say this, watching the tape, and I didn't watch the coach's tape of the last game, but I saw it in person, and we're watching the receivers. I haven't seen a lot of separation. And so, I believe in the unit probably more than most people because I think they got some potential. But I don't think they had a great preseason either. I don't think anybody on this offense had a great preseason. Quarterback, line, receivers. You don't go the entire preseason as the first unit, only score 10 points. Those 10 points came off of two long pass interference penalties. Really no sustained drives for the entire preseason for the first unit. That's just not the quarterback, just not the offensive line. It's every position group. I don't think any of them had an impressive preseason. They got to get better.
I think it's an okay group. It's not a group that's going to knock your socks off, but it's good enough. And when you have quarterback play that gets better, protection that gets better, perfect example is the play that I diagrammed on Jaguars All Access Monday night.
McCown's throw.
In which if you looked, absolutely, if you looked at that play, and if it was an incomplete pass, you'd say there was no separation. But Luke McCown put it right on the spot.
Talk about the Zach Potter throw?
Yeah.
The catch.
No, absolutely.
So the quarterback sometimes can make the separation look more than what it is.
But do you agree that there hasn't been a bunch of separation? We haven't had a bunch of guys running wide open where the quarterback is.
It's a young group.
Yeah.
It's going to get better.
I'm with you. I feel the same way.
Take a break. More to come. Jaguars this week right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. What do you say? Look, we've got 8 minutes left in this half hour. What do you say we clear all the Garrard callers out, and then in the next half hour we can talk about opening day, 9/11, the Titans?
Yeah, let's go ahead and finish this conversation with John from Brooklyn because he wants to take the Luke approach.
Let's do it. John's in Brooklyn, New York. Hello, John.
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
My question is, now that David Garrard finally got left-witched, what does Luke McCown? What does Luke McCown bring to us? What does Luke McCown bring to the table? I mean, what do the coaches see that we don't see? Does he throw the deep ball well? Or
Luke is a quarterback that I think that is a very heady quarterback. I wouldn't put him in the category of the guy at Buffalo.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
No. That was Harvard or Yale grad, whatever
Harvard.
It was. But he's a hardworking quarterback. He's been around the league long enough to know that. And I think, watching him through the years, he's one of those guys that every week gets the game plan early. He watches tape on his days off. He comes in on his days off. He makes quick decisions. I think you're going to see more flexibility with Luke McCown at quarterback when he comes to the line of scrimmage than maybe with the David Garrard, because he can process more information a little bit quicker than David, and that's not a knock on David. David's strength was, being able to have a singular focus of passing, and then also his ability to run. So, you have two different strengths with each quarterback, and I think the Dirk Cutter will play to Luke's strengths, who doesn't have as strong an arm as David, can probably process a little more information, change of play at the line of scrimmage, maybe get him to a better look. So that's what I'm hoping.
Jeff, do you think, is this team better with Luke McCown?
I don't know if it makes that big of a difference. With the style of team that they are.
If it doesn't make that big a difference, why don't you just go Blaine Gabbert then?
Because that would be a big difference.
Is that a big difference?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at this point, it's a big difference. Now, maybe, not 2 months from now.
Right.
But right now, Blaine's not ready for that. Because the number of – I read a comment that Blaine had talked about during the preseason, and he said something in response to, boy, you see a lot of different looks. If he thinks he's seen a lot of different looks in the preseason,
he hasn't even started.
He has no idea.
Yeah. And I'm
all
for putting a rookie in early. And, I was, writing about, Blaine or David at the beginning of the training camp in preseason. But in the last couple of games, you saw certain things just not quite ready to be the guy yet.
Yeah, but I think a guy who's a veteran
okay.
guy. Yeah, and I think a guy who's a veteran guy, I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference one way or the other. Now, you may end up getting more in one area and you get a little bit less in another area, but I think this team is still going to be a team, in my opinion, that's going to compete for a division title.
All right. If we're just hypothesizing then, and that's all we can do because we don't know, then maybe that's the realization that they came to over the weekend, is that with him or without him, we still have some deficiencies and we're still going to be a run the ball, play great run defense, and we might as well save, what was it?
Here's six, seven million bucks? Well, here's the other thing.
They said money had nothing to do with it.
Come on.
Well, here's the other thing, though. Well, money has something to do with it if he's not going to be a starter.
That's exactly
right.
My point.
If he's not the starter, but Brian's hypothesis is they're going into the fact that if it's no different,
yes.
then let's get rid of him. Well, if it's no different, you go with the guy you know in David Garrard.
Well, maybe they felt they knew the other guy,
too. They obviously felt like he's better. I mean, you don't make that call. My point in asking Jeff that question is you don't make the cut of David Garrard, your quarterback, the last 4 years, who you have named the starter the entire preseason, unless you think you are There's a marked difference in your ball club that Luke McCown makes you better. You don't do it.
That's one side of it. The other side of it is are we going to pay a guy that we're going to end up putting on the bench?
No, that's not the question.
It is to a lot of people.
Not what we were told by the owner, who I believe. And I know everyone's very cynical. I actually believe Wayne when he says it had nothing to do with money. I really do. And I believe Gene when he says this was not a money decision. It might have become a money decision once they put him as the backup. I get it. You don't pay a $9 million backup. But what you're saying...
I'm saying if you weren't certain he was going to be the guy all season long.
No, you don't make that decision, in my opinion, unless you believe Luke makes you better.
After they spent the kind of money they did in late July, if you really think that for $8 million they decided on Monday night, we're going to get worse...
No way.
There's no way.
No way. Even if they thought we're the same.
Here's the other thing to think about, too, is that, you know, if... Going in the season, and I'm not trying to say that this was a reasoning for the decision, but if you have David and Luke and Blaine into the season, how many reps does Blaine Gabbert get through the season to get better?
I don't think that goes into it, Jeff.
No, it doesn't. I'm just saying this is kind of a sidebar.
That's a sidebar, but I think John made a great point. If you think about how much money Wayne Weaver spent this offseason on this defense to what? To be average? No.
No.
He spent the money because Gene Smith told him if we get these guys, we can go from being 8-5 and falling apart to being 8-5 and closing out the division and winning a division and getting a home playoff game if I get these guys. So you don't spend $50+ million on two linebackers or $70 million, two linebackers and a safety, and then wake up Monday night or Tuesday morning and say, I'm going to try to save $8 million and just be average. You do that because you think that's the guy that can get you to where you planned on being all along.
Who do you want mentoring your new young quarterback, David or Luke?
I'm not a big mentoring guy.
Cutter.
Yeah. The coach is and
Peyton Manning.
Yeah, that's right.
Tom Brady.
Yeah,
Drew Brees.
That means you're just letting them sit back and learn.
I mean, right.
All right.
Joe Montana, John Elway, can I get those guys to come mentor him? Yeah, nothing against Luke, but chance, I mean. But...
All right, we got about 2 minutes
come
left.
On, guys.
We got about 2 minutes left in this half hour, and who do you want? We'll finish it out.
Go with Bob.
Last caller.
Bob, no, let's go Kathy.
All right.
We haven't a lady yet.
There you go. Kathy's in Murray Hill. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, how are you guys?
Okay.
Good.
Well, listen, I just wanted to make a comment. I watched all preseason, being a fan since 95, whatever. And I told my husband this preseason, the third preseason game, Luke McGowan is a dark horse. You watch, before the end of the year, he's going to be the starter.
He was really dark and he didn't play that game.
He didn't even play the third game, Kathy.
He didn't play the third game or whatever game it was. I saw some games.
Must have been the second game.
Falcons game with
a
touchdown.
Listen, he is really good, guys. And nothing against David, but being a fan... I got kind of bored with his play. You know, I mean, the offensive line I know didn't play up to par the last game and so forth for him, but I just think Luke is doing a good... Listen, at the end of the day, it's done, it's over with, let's move on, let's win games.
Kathy, I'm in agreement with you, I'm excited, I'm looking forward to watching Luke McCown play, and you know what, last year at San Diego when David had a miserable game and Luke came in relief, I don't know if he wouldn't have won the starting job at that point.
We might not even have this conversation if Luke doesn't blow his knee out then.
All right. We'll take a break for news at the top of the hour and come back 60 more minutes. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it.
Tony's a glass half-empty type of guy. He's kind of in that mold with Vic Ketchman.
Oh, wow.
He's kind of overreacted a little bit to this whole offensive line thing.
Welcome to the new Jaguars This Week, baby. It is lively for sure. I guess we're the antagonists this evening on this side of the fence, but it's never going to stay that way, not with four people in the room. That much is for sure. 355-NFL, 1-800-355.
How'd you like that boat I put you in there?
That was good. I like that.
Now,
I told them to make sure they were recording that so
good.
We could replay
that
on Wednesday.
That was very good.
You'll hear it.
My only question, I wanted to ask, what did you think about the offensive line play of this
Well, I was referring to the.
I was very critical. Listen.
Not the Buffalo game, but the game before in which the Atlanta game.
We were terrible.
And you thought they were completely terrible, and I said there were parts that were terrible. So there's a difference.
overall.
So my glass was half full on that evaluation. Yours was half empty.
Let me ask you a question. If you look at the body of work, as we like to say, of the preseason in our offensive line,
mm-hmm.
and the guys up front who I root for harder than anybody during the week,
mm-hmm.
how would you grade them or judge them?
The glass is half full. They got work to do. They got work to do, but
no,
I'm not going to say that.
I'm not talking glass half full.
I'm just saying that there's
they
work to do.
They have a ton of potential. I mean, I think Eugene Monroe has the ability to be a Pro Bowl left tackle.
And so do I. I want to see more out of him.
I'm sure at 287 he can do it.
But I think that Guy Whimper is a guy you're going to protect a little bit when you come to game planning.
But right now you got to protect both, Jeff, the way the play was during the preseason.
No. You can chip on the way out on the other side. But here's the – because, and I say that, because Eugene has the ability to be good.
I agree.
I believe that.
But you and I both know in this league the ability to be good and being good sometimes is a long road.
And sometimes it's time to step up.
I agree. I hope he does. Listen, I've rooted for this guy, and I know he's a Virginia guy like you, so you even have
a – So you know he's way smarter than any Trojan.
I don't care if you're smart or not. I just want to know if you can block the wide six.
He's got a tough challenge.
You can be as dumb as a box of rocks. If you can block the wide six, you can play.
He's got a tough challenge this week. Former defensive tackle, moved to defensive end. Jason Jones, I believe
He's a good player.
Big
is
physical
a
guy.
Very good, big physical guy that's been
a little
banged up for the Titans, but he's a good football player. Eugene's going to have to be ready.
All right. But he's tall, high-cut guy, so which I always like playing against because it's easier. It's harder for those guys to get down and bowl you. I mean, he's taller. I mean, as a tall guy, I always thought it was easier to go block a guy who's 6'5", 6'6".
Well, it's going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, he's a good player.
All right, big story of the day, league-wide, is not the David Garrard story, believe it or not. It's the Peyton Manning story. And there is a report out of Indianapolis. Jake Query, who is a news reporter at WNDE. Do you know him at all?
I know him a little bit. The two guys who have broken the stories or gotten the notoriety for breaking the stories up there this week, you know, both good radio guys. And, I don't know that their sources are impeccable, but I know they wouldn't report it if they didn't believe them to be.
Well, Query is reporting today that third surgery on Peyton Manning's neck took place Sunday or Monday, and that Manning will not play this year. Now, I mean, it's just conjecture at this point. But we do know that bringing Kerry Collins in was a dramatic move for Bill Polian, and he isn't going to play Sunday. And we talked about, you even said, because you know him so well, it'd be hard to imagine him not playing in Houston because he's that kind of a guy.
If there was any chance of him playing, he was not going to let that streak fade. That's outside of the Super Bowl. That probably means more to him than any stat. You know, he takes a lot of pride in it because he is aware that there is a perception that he's not tough, and he doesn't agree with that. And he believes that if you play every week, that you're pretty tough in this league.
Yeah.
I just, from day one when they brought in Kerry, it struck me as something that franchise does not bring in a veteran quarterback like that if it's just a 1 or 2 week minor thing. They would have gone with their younger backups, believing they could get that, you know, get by with a win and a loss during a 2 or 3 week period. When Kerry got there, it was indication that something, much more than a short term thing was at stake.
He's not a young man. This is a serious injury. I do think that we have to discuss at least the possibility that this could be career-ending for him.
Well, I mean, two things. One, anytime you're dealing with a nerve that is struggling to come back, I mean, nerve regeneration is not an exact science. I mean, you are doing things to try to promote it, both in the rehab and the surgical process, but a lot of unknowns. And the bottom line is if you can't get your strength back in your arm, and the report I heard, John, was his tricep. He couldn't get the strength back in his tricep where it plateaued, which is an important part of throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back pain, too. That was the thing that really clued
him in. And back pain as well. So I think, you know, you just sit back and you don't know. A third surgery, does he sit out the whole year? Does he, you know, is he able ever to get back to what he was? I imagine he's, you know, knowing Peyton from a distance and watching him play, he's one of the greatest competitors we've seen. So my guess is he'll be back on the field at some point, but is he ever back physically to what he was able to be. And the other thing is I was dead wrong. I mean, I sat here and argued all day with Jeff that day and John that saying Kerry Collins coming in doesn't change one thing, and I'd bet anything that Peyton Manning would be on the field. I am glad nobody took me up on that bet anything because I'd be paying off whatever the bet was.
Right. Didn't we have a bet? I thought it was like $500.
It was dinner on the road.
It was dinner on the road.
No, it was not.
That was an expensive one, too.
At a high-end restaurant with, you know, unlimited wine supply.
Exactly.
The Anchor Bar.
10 of us. Yeah. Well, it certainly is the story in the AFC South. And so the question mark then becomes, is this the Texans' division to take?
No. Only because I don't buy the Texans.
Okay.
And, you know, Bob McNair, the owner, a good man, who's great to me when I was there. It's a franchise or a team that we have talked about for the last 4 or 5 years as the up-and-coming. This
oh, sure.
is the year. They have more talent, and they got all these guys that, you know, are game-breakers and Andre Johnson. What's changed? What, you know, they've added a free agent here or there. I think they actually got bigger challenges on the defensive side of the ball going to the 3-4.
Yeah,
I don't think Mario Williams is a 3-4 defense outside linebacker. I think they should keep his hand on the ground. If you want to play 3-4, fine. Make him the 5 technique and rush the passer on third down. I think they're going to have some learning. There's going to be a learning curve.
They're going to have a big learning curve on defense.
Yeah.
You know, Brian, I mean, how many times have we talked, you know, whether it be in pregame shows, you know, radio broadcasts. If you're going to play the 3-4, what do you have to have? Stud linebackers,
yeah.
right? And you got to have stud linebackers. And watching Mario Williams in the preseason, he doesn't look anything close to being a stud linebacker. He looks like a guy who's out of position.
Put your hand on the ground.
Well, here's the thing.
And who else do they have at linebacker?
You're putting an awful lot of, and, you know, their big theory is whenever Wade Phillips has come in, say what you want about him as a head coach, he has a, you know, fairly sterling reputation for turning around defenses, and that's what they're hanging their hat on. I'm with you guys. With that franchise, as quote-unquote talented as they are, they've never been able to get over the hump, and there is a process to getting over that hump they haven't done yet.
I did the opening game last year against the Colts where they just ran through and they dominated. I think you were there, John. I think I might have – or it was maybe later in the year I saw you. But one
right.
of the first game, it was a dominating game, and everyone said – it's the Texans division. They're the team to beat. They went 6-10. I mean, they were below average. I mean, maybe
well,
they could do it.
Here's why I say it. If Peyton Manning is not on the field, they are the most explosive offense in the AFC.
They've been
South.
The most explosive offense for the last
well,
4 years.
Got, they've
well,
got a marquee back
no, I mean,
that
the
has
Colts
a hamstring
have been
the
most
issue.
Explosive.
The other thing we have, I mean, the Texans have, you know, the lead
hamstring.
Premier back, and he's got a hamstring issue. You know, so can they get over a hump? Will the defense work? Can their running back, you know, recover from a significant hamstring injury? There's a lot of questions there. But, you know, we talk about questions of Peyton Manning's neck, which is a huge question mark. That shouldn't even be a question mark. I mean, that should be a question mark on the entire franchise. When you talk about him,
mm-hmm.
it's not just a question in one area. That's a franchise question. With the Texans, you're dealing with area questions. Tennessee has area questions. The Jaguars have area questions. Every team in the league has area questions. That's the beautiful
part. Some bigger
part.
Than others.
Yeah, some bigger than others.
Jeff, what is Indy finish? Peyton Manning's out for the year. What's their record?
Well, they're sub 500 all day long.
Yeah, they're
no, 6 or 7 win team.
They're lucky to get to 6.
Yeah,
they're lucky to get to 6. But
and
question.
So that so they're out of it. I actually listen as negative and as difficult or whatever you want us to say about the whole David Garrard thing and me disagreeing with the process and the timing and everything else. I think this team is positioned if they get – I don't even put it on the quarterback. This is where I agree with Jeff. It's the offensive line. If this offensive line, who I believe in, plays well this year, they will win the AFC South. Because I believe in the defense. I love the changes that Gene Smith has made. I think Terrence Knight and Tyson Alualu – now, barring health. Like everyone's
right.
got to say healthy. Those two are the two premier defensive tackles in the AFC South have a chance to become that for the entire – AFC, they're that good. They're going to be a dominating run defense, much better against the pass because of that. If the big guys play well, this is a team that I like to win the South.
All right, we need to take a break. Let's take it now. We'll come back and carry on with that thought process here. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. And we return Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, here on News Talk WOKV. Where were we? We were talking about where the Jaguars face, or pardon me, where they place in the division if they stay healthy, and based on Peyton Manning's neck and the questions you have with the Texans and the Titans, you say, despite the move with Garrard, if the offensive line plays well,
they compete for the
division title.
What's the best part about this offense? The defense is, I think, the defensive tackles and the run defense with those three linebackers who are studs. What's the best part of the offense?
The last 4 or 5 years, it's been
running game.
It's all about the running game.
Okay, and so what makes a good running game go, Jeff? You got to block up front.
Offensive line play.
You got to play well up front. And what is a good run game? It sets up easy pass plays, easy play action. It eats up the clock. It keeps a fresh defense who's big and physical on the sideline in a division that, frankly, right now is fairly weak without Peyton Manning in it. And a lot of questions with, you know, the Texans going to the 3-4, completely revamping Tennessee. Don't forget Mike Munchak, very good coach, new head coach, no TAs, no offseason. There's going to be a learning curve there. If we get good play up front, Luke, and I know he'll hate to hear this, be a game manager, play smart. There's no reason this team cannot win the South.
And haven't they struggled in years past to run the ball in the preseason and gotten better?
It's the way they've always been.
Right.
Because they put so much emphasis on working on the passing game. You know, they feel that's their opportunity. They have the belief, and for the last 3 years, I've sat there and I went, there's no way they're going to be able to run the football when they get the regular season. They come out in the regular season.
Except for last year, Jeff, if you remember, they started very slow running the ball. In fact, we had conversations about Maurice's numbers early were very poor. And I think it was about week 4, middle of the season, Maurice got hot and they rode him.
No, he got hot about week 9.
Was it that late?
Yeah, it was that late.
They really struggled early, and they really
had that string
of
100-yard games in a row. I
think some of that was also the change in the coaching staff and the change of the approach. You know, Mike Tice is gone, Kennedy Pola gone. You got a new staff, and then once they recommitted to that run, then they were able to do that.
That might be it.
So
Maurice started out hurt last year too, and to hear Maurice tell it, he feels healthier this year than he did this time last year, so maybe that makes a difference.
What were their numbers early?
All right, here we go. He had 23 carries for 98 against Denver. They fell behind so bad in San Diego, it's tough to look at 12 for 31 and say that had anything to do with him.
I'm not saying just him.
Philadelphia, 22 for 88. Indy, 26 for 105 and a touchdown.
But those aren't big numbers. Those aren't the 150-yard
games.
No, but
they're good numbers.
Decent numbers.
When
they are dominant, Jeff, is they're putting up 135 to 160.
Here you go. His stretch was Dallas 135, Houston 100, Cleveland 133, the Giants 113, and that's impressive against that Giants team. 186 against Tennessee, 101 against the
Raiders.
Now,
these are just his numbers.
Yeah, I'm just talking.
What are the rushing numbers for the team more than anything? That's where it really started slow because they got no production out of Rashad early.
Shows you where I've been the last 10 years. Those first 5 games look pretty darn good.
That's right. Stuck in
Indy. We won't talk about the passing numbers.
I thought they were pretty good numbers too, Tony. Holy cow.
If you look at the team numbers, they started slow.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, here you go. I'll give them to you. So the Jaguars.
Maybe I remember wrong. Here we go.
They ran for 134 against the Broncos.
Opening day, they played well.
They only ran for 71 in San Diego, but remember, they were down.
That was four interceptions in the game for David there.
At half, absolutely. That had to go away. They ran for 139 against the Eagles. They ran for 174 against the Colts.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
They ran for 216 against the Bills.
Yeah, I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
216 against the Bills.
I misremembered. They did run well.
Then against
they ran well.
All them hits to the head I gave you.
Then again, against the Titans here, they fell down 17-0 at the half, and they only ran for 76.
So the point is, what we agree on is they always struggle during the preseason and always run well, whether it's early, late,
season.
Or overall the overall season.
Their numbers the rest of the way, they were over 140.
They were dominant the rest of the year.
Yeah, they had 3 200-yard games in a row. They had more than 150 rushing yards every game the rest of the way.
And if that happens this year, I think we're all in agreement that it's got a chance to be a pretty competitive team.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so how do they continue to do that, knowing that Maurice is not going to be able to carry the ball 30 times a game?
I mean, heck,
and
way,
you don't have Rashad.
The way Deji looked.
The way Deji looked.
Oh, I thought he looked fantastic.
The only thing I worry about Deji, Jeff, is he's not the best pass blocker. So it limits when you can put him in the game.
Yeah, but that's what you got Zach Potter for and Greg Jones and those other guys that got lots of big muscles. You know what I mean?
No, I know. That was the nice thing about, Rashad. You really could do a lot of different things when he was in the game.
You know, they ran for 258, which is the second most in franchise history last December in Tennessee. They had 53 carries. Maurice had 31 of them. And
dominated the game, but didn't dominate the scoreboard.
Right. But here's the thing, Logs, is I went back and I looked, just reading it, Rashad Jennings had 44 yards, but they were important yards.
Big plays.
They were big plays on third down. He was a critical component.
Absolutely.
That's where the stats don't tell the number. Jennings was a critical player.
And here's what you won't get out of Deji. You won't get 4 yards, 5 yards, 3 yards, 8 yards. You're going to get 2 yards, 4 yards, 15 yards. I mean, you're going to get bigger chunks, I think, at times with him.
He's a scat back.
So who can they turn to get four?
They're going to have to go with
Maurice.
Maurice is going to be your guy. You're going to have to go with some single back with Brock Bolin. If he's active, you know, look at Montel Owens as a guy when they've needed to run the single back.
I like Montel better than I do Brock Bolin.
I like Montel. I think Montel actually is a guy who can run the ball if you give him a chance. And so those guys are going to have to pick up the slack.
All right. And in the running game, the big guys up front, how's Will Rackley and Uche Nwaneri? We've talked about Uche over the years, Lodge, as being a guy who has some inconsistencies in his game. And Rackley's a rookie making a position switch.
Yeah, and I think in the preseason, I think Uche did not play particularly well in the first game. But I thought since then, I thought he played very well. And so, if he would just get consistent, he could be Pro Bowl consideration type of guy because he has games that he just plays really well. I think Brad Meester is dependable and consistent. Will Rackley has the ability to push, you know. But there's going to be a learning curve for him too, you know. I mean, he used to playing against a bunch of guys in preseason. All of a sudden, and that's one of the things that I noticed when I went to a preseason game my rookie year to the regular season. That knob is turned up a couple more notches, you know, and the level of play is turned up a whole bunch more. So he's going to have to adjust that a little bit, but it'll be all right.
Let's see inside the Titans' defense look like now. Sean Smith is a big guy who came from Kansas City, and Sen'Derek Marks is a guy. Third-year guy from Auburn that's had some ankle issues.
You don't really know about him.
I mean, Barrett Rude in the middle.
Sean Smith is okay. Barrett Rude's a pretty good player. You know, Tennessee's going to play, you know, fairly stout eight-man-in-the-box defense. I mean, that's what they've done, you know, a lot in the past history. But they've got a new defensive coordinator in Jerry Gray who is going to probably run a little bit more blitz-type stuff. And if you look at the preseason numbers, they were +9 or +10 in the preseason. Got a lot of takeaways as a defense, which means they were gambling a lot,
right,
sending pressure packages. Jerry Gray comes from a little bit of a background of Greg Williams, and we know what style of defense he plays.
Well,
so.
And he's a Fisher guy. He was there when they ran a lot of 46 principles.
Yep, it's going to be a little bit different. You know, it's a little bit different than what they've seen in the past. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be anything tremendously complicated.
Well, I'll be interested to watch and see what the defense, how they play as far as an attitude. They always took on, that entire team took on Jeff Fisher's attitude.
Sure.
Kind of tough nose, scrappy, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, play with an edge type of team. I mean, their whole team played that. When we played them, you know, through the years early, and then I always watched that defense, even when they didn't have the best players, they played with that edge.
Yep.
They were always, you know, Cortland Finnegan's the perfect example. He embodies that. Will they still have that with Munchak as their head coach, who's obviously a hard-nosed guy, played in the league for a long time with Jerry Gray as their DC? I mean, just from a fan standpoint, it'll be fun to watch and see what the attitude of the team is.
We got a break for news. When we come back, I want to talk the other side of it. I want to talk Chris Johnson back. They're saying no limitations for him on Sunday, and obviously we have a rebuilt Jacksonville defense to lay out there against him. We'll get a good look at that on Sunday afternoon. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today or on your way to the stadium on Sunday. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna from Everbank Field in Jacksonville returns after this on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Well, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville location. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Ryan Sexton, John Osher, Tony Baselli, Jeff Loggam, and Joe Fortunato. To be honest, I can't answer all the tweets. I mean, I'm going to grab some.
I stopped looking.
There's lots and lots and lots of them in the conversation tonight. And I'm sorry to all the folks who have sent them in. Has just been so compelling. We haven't gotten there. Remember, you call Jeff. He is 800-355-NFL1 if you want to talk to Loggeman. Otherwise, you can tweet at Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. And Joe, you answer everything, right? Okay. So let's talk the other side of the ball, Logs. Chris Johnson this week. Mike Munchak said there are no limitations, although I think Chris Palmer came out today and made the comment that, you know, his conditioning level was concern.
Mike Munchak said there's no limitations, but you got to be smart. I mean, that's saying that there's got to be limitations, you know. And Bruce Matthews, the offensive line coach, came out and said essentially the same thing, that, you know, you got to kind of watch his carries. And, you know, I would think that they have, you know, more than one running back on the roster, that they're still going to try to do what they've always done, but they've got a little bit of a luxury. They've got Hasselbeck, who's a veteran guy who Chris Palmer believes in, and I would expect that they will take the pressure off of him with the arm of Matt Hasselbeck. I really believe that. Javon Ringer's a little banged up. He had a hip pointer, but he's on the injury report today for a back. Last time I checked, back and hip aren't the same thing, so he's got something else going on. So I don't know. I think that 20 carries, I think, would be a number for him. But, you know, if Chris Johnson gets 20 carries,
he could have 200 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I don't think so against this defense. What do you think based on what you've seen from these guys?
I mean, I don't, well, you can't make a judgment on it because you haven't seen Chris Johnson yet. You know, and this defense, the Jaguars defense, I thought in the preseason was, against the run, was very stout. You know, they gave up, I think, less than 4 yards a carry on defense. And they mixed and matched a lot of guys. When you get your guys out there, I think it's going to be a lot better. So I think this is the perfect game for the Jaguars.
It's absolutely the perfect game.
I mean, because you're playing a team that doesn't have a running back that's found a stride. You've got a team that's got a new quarterback and a new coach in the first game of the season. Could you ask for anything more?
Yeah. And this is also a game where
it's at home.
If the Jaguars' defense is as good as they think they are, then this is a game where they need to shut down Chris Johnson, because this is clearly what the defense is going to be built on all year. And you need to find out if you're that good.
I think, though, that I really believe that they're going to take the pressure off of Chris Johnson with the arm of the veteran quarterback, because Chris Palmer loves to throw the football. I mean, Chris Palmer was in Cleveland, tried to throw the ball around the yard. Yeah. With a team that had no business throwing the ball around the yard. And then when he was with the Giants, what did he do with Tom Coughlin up there? Right. Wasn't run the football a whole ton. I mean, it was throwing the ball around with Eli Manning. So I think he's going to turn to the arm of the veteran quarterback.
All right, let's grab a couple of tweets here. Tom wants to know, is Zach Miller healthy? He's not on the injury report today.
Not on the injury report. You know, I think you got to wonder about what type of role he's going to have. He didn't play a number of preseason games. And we know that the coordinators like to rep plays that are meant for certain guys. And he wasn't able to do that the last couple weeks. So I don't know. You know, that's – and I said this a couple weeks ago to you. I've kind of jumped off the Zach Miller bandwagon a little bit. And it's not because I'm down on him. It's because I want to see some production and him healthy.
Sooner or later, you got to see it.
Yeah.
You can't just talk about it.
I mean, we've saw little – bits and pieces of exciting plays and speed, you know, got to see it week in and week out.
Talking about injuries, another question on the Twitter is about any concern with Tyson Alualu and the needed rest he took the last two preseason games. We talked about this Jaguars defense, which I love Tyson Alualu, and I love Terrence Knight and Pot Roast next to each other. We only really got to see it for one game. They were dominating when they were in there.
I'm concerned.
Tyson came out. Missed two preseason games. Nothing really disclosed.
You know, reportedly had knee injuries last year.
Yep. Am I concerned? Lower leg injury.
Sure, I'm concerned.
Yep. He wears a brace. I mean, we've never seen it, but doesn't he wear a brace?
I think he's wearing a sleeve.
Wore sleeve.
But he was limited today, I think you said?
Yes. Yeah, limited on injury report.
Released. Right. And so, yeah, I think it is a concern, because I think you talk about this great run defense. I think Tyson's a big part of that. Defense being successful. So,
I think there's a key to their defense. If there's one guy they can't lose, I think he's it. And obviously, with that much rest, with not playing the last two preseason games, it's something to watch as you move forward.
Anything else from your Twitter feed? Because that was on mine, and I was going that way as well.
I got a number that probably shouldn't be asked.
Yeah, me too. All right, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Back real quick to the Titans on offense and Matt Hasselbeck. And he comes in, and when you look at their receivers on tape, is it Kenny Britt? I mean, is he primarily the guy that the Jaguars are
concerned the home run threat. I mean,
he's a stud.
You know, the last 2 years he's averaged, what, almost 20 yards of completed pass to him. I mean, he's a big-time player. He's got big time off the field issues.
Big time head
case, you know, Nate Washington is, you know, I mean, does he scare anybody? You know, I mean, no.
But Kenny Britt, guys, I mean, he's a legit number one player. If he doesn't have the off the field problems, if he isn't always a, you know, he's a threat to go deep, he's also been a threat to end up
in jail,
you know, in jail or on the police blotter. Without that off the field stuff, he is a dominating outside receiver. Big, fast, and gives people fits. I mean, I think he's the one guy, and he's a guy with Matt Hasselbeck that makes you think twice about putting that eighth guy in the box to slow down Chris Johnson. I think he, if you're looking at defending this Titan offense, that's a key piece. How he plays, where he is mentally, physically, that's a big piece.
When they were going good last year, and it's easy to forget because they finished so bad.
5-2.
You know, for a long time, they were, you know, sort of shaping up to have one of those Titans type years where they all of a sudden they're there at 11-5.
They came in here Monday night,
right,
and embarrassed us.
But when they were going good, Kenny Britt, for about, you know, 4 or 5 games, was playing as well as any young receiver in the league. And he is one of those few guys who, from that position, can legitimately string 3 or 4 games together where he looks dominant.
If you remember the opening drive of that ball game last year here, I mean, it was Kenny Britt, touchdown. I mean, he had 3 catches on the opening drive, including the touchdown, to go up 7-0. So he is a big-time player.
Yeah, hey, a lot of people are wanting to have, you know, Jaguars need to get a wide receiver, right? I mean, how many times have we heard that in the last couple weeks?
We had a dollar for
everyone. You take Kenny Britt out of the equation in Tennessee, what do they got?
A lot less.
Yeah, but you can't say that. Kenny Britt's not out of the equation.
No, I'm just saying that.
Kenny Britt is a
But, I mean, the Jaguars
playmaker.
Are trying to get a Kenny Britt through the draft.
Right.
You know, maybe one of these guys can emerge to be that type of player. Obviously,
and
you don't
find that guy typically in free agency as
no,
much as people want to think
no.
you do.
I agree with you.
Got to draft him.
You get trouble at wide receiver in free agency more than you get success.
Ricky's on the south side. Hello, Ricky. Welcome to the program. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. What's on your mind?
My question is, you're saying that the Jaguars should be able to fight for the division at the end of this season. But my question is, you're not saying how well the Jaguars are. You keep saying how Peyton Manning shouldn't play for the Colts, which should help you out. The Houston Texans are just the Houston Texans, and Tennessee doesn't have a quarterback. So my question is, are you fighting for the division because you deserve to have the division, or are you fighting for the division because you're the best of the worst?
Can I answer that with a question? In 1996, with a missed Morton Anderson field goal, did we deserve to be in the playoffs, or did we fall into the playoffs?
Well, my thing is, if you win again, you win again.
Okay, perfect. That's all you have to say. Then it doesn't matter who else is in the division. They could all be the worst teams in the NFL. We could be the worst. We could be the NFC West of last year. If we win the division, we get a home playoff game, and you get in the tournament, baby,
yep.
Anything
can happen. Well, look
what Seattle
did to New Orleans. I mean, nobody gave New Orleans any chance to lose, let alone Seattle any chance to win.
Well, and Ricky, I mean, we just got done talking about how we believe this defense is going to be much better.
Right.
You know, the special teams, I mean, we've said for, 2 years now?
Great special teams.
That this is a great special teams, that we believe that this offense is going to be the same style of offense, and they're not going to drop as far as a level in their performance because it's been a running-based offense. I mean, so what didn't you hear?
And in a lot of respects, this is still a young team, much like the 96 team was still a young team. With this young a team where it's building, putting stuff together, get in and worry about style points in the next couple of years.
Hey, by the way, I just got a tweet from somebody who says that the injury report today said that Alualu was limited but not injury-related. And
correct.
He's right. That's true. It did say that. It said that he was limited in practice, but it wasn't because of an injury.
Okay.
So,
just either way,
it's still he missed the last 2 preseason games.
No.
And
I just want to correct so that folks understand.
That's accurate.
Yep, it is accurate. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. I want to talk about special teams and the rules changes, and then a little bit about 9/11 here on the Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Well, fans, you can just text BBQ to 72239. That's BBQ 72239. and enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. By the way, we begin things on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. At noon, it's the Sonny's Pregame Show, where you will hear from head coach Jack Del Rio and general manager Gene Smith. Cole talked to Uche Wanyere. Does that air in that?
Yes.
Uche Wanyere talks about opening day. Etna Big Halftime Show with Cole and Marco, then the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show with the first word from Jack Del Rio and the Bubba Burgers Coaches Report. And then Marco and Cole take it with the Southern Four Dealers.
And this is not going to be a typical opener. I mean, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance that are related to 9/11 events. There's going to be some things that are going on league-wide.
Taps, I think, from Pennsylvania.
Fill us in, Joe.
Yeah, taps from Shanksville. There's a message from, I believe, Robert De Niro has a message. The NFL has a message. And then we'll, you know, have the anthem and then some more things for halftime.
And a kick butt flyover.
Fang.
Burn the scoreboard tops down.
They come low and slow.
I'm jealous that I won't
You'll be
there to see it. I'll be in Baltimore. My question is this.
Wait a minute. Your 1 o'clock game in Baltimore? You'll see the same thing up there. But
no, I know.
Not as good of a flyover.
Not as good as flyovers.
No.
All the buildup will be the same.
Yeah.
But I've been in a lot of stadiums. Jacksonville gets the best flyover.
Yeah. The
I'm
best.
Just telling you.
Hey, by the way, before you go there, I want to, just on 9/11, have you guys seen The Rising on Discovery Channel?
I have not.
All 6 hours of it, it's about the conversion of the 16 acres there in Lower Manhattan. It's one of them is just on the two fountains. You know, they took the footprints of the buildings and they made these amazing fountains in the exact size. It's breathtaking. One of them is on the museum and all of the pieces, the fire truck that they kept and all that stuff. And then the others are on the rebuilding. And it tells the rebuilding through the story of people whose lives were shattered. I'm telling you, it's on. You should DVR it. It's on the Science Channel on Sunday from 5 p.m. till 11 p.m. in its entirely
commercial free. Now, what
station
is that? Because that's the smart,
that's Discovery.
That's the smart guy station. I stay away from that usually. Right. So could you tell me what station that is?
I've got Dish.
I know you haven't memorized.
It's 193. Yeah, it's 193. Well, Science Channel is 193 on Dish.
So just
but look,
search for
the
it.
Science Channel.
Break away for a minute from Nickelodeon there,
but I want to tell you.
Disney Channel.
I want to tell you, and I want to tell every one of the listeners, if you want moving television, I mean television that glues you to your seat, that will make you cry, then please, by all, don't miss The Rising. It is presented commercial-free for 6 hours on Sunday night. DVR it.
This Sunday coming up.
Well, 9/11, absolutely.
Right.
And it is.
Have you already seen it?
I've been watching it all along.
Gotcha.
But I know that on Discovery, they're moving it to Science on Sunday so they can show all 6 hours. And it is, I'm telling you, I'll never say this about TV because there's so many different choices. It's must-see TV.
All right, let me just throw another plug-in for must-see television. On the 14th, which is next Wednesday night, the NFL Network is going to be showing the first of a two-part series in which Bill Belichick was mic'd up for the entire 2009 season.
Now, what time does that start?
I think it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I think it's 9 o'clock.
Listen to the show first.
Yeah, that's right. And then check out NFL Network for that. And I can't remember what they call it, what the name of it is.
I'm sure looking forward here.
But it's a two-part series, and I think it's
the obviously hood? The hoodie.
The hoodie is mic'd up, you know, before training camp opens up and then all throughout the regular season. And nobody knew this, that he was mic'd up. So pretty cool stuff. You know, it's going to be kind of Vince Lombardi-esque, you know, and then also the guy of Kansas City.
Hank Stram
was mic'd up for all those years. I mean, I think this is going to be tremendous. I'm going to be glued to the TV and can't wait to watch it. And then they also have some other shows along those lines coming up with Reggie White, Walter Payton, Jerome Brown.
The show is called A Football Life.
A Football Life.
Tony, do you have anything on Nick at Night you want to plug?
And what is it that you watch, Mr. Osher?
I mean, seriously.
About the same.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
About the same.
Dive in there, Mr. Genius.
I don't have much.
Digging into?
Hey,
no, but the must, I'll say
what's be backfist across the whole table all
year
long.
Must see TV is Thursday night, opening night.
Yeah.
Green Bay, New Orleans. I don't care what else is going on. Got to watch that.
We've got to talk about special teams real quick. Let's start with the rules changes and how you think moving the kickoff forward to the 35-yard line will play out this season. Because Logs and I were talking earlier today. By the way, here's a plug for Must-See TV. Our season preview airs on Saturday night on CBS 47. I don't know what time, though.
That's 7 o'clock Saturday night, Tony. must-see TV for you. Yeah. Set your DVR.
I'll be in Baltimore.
But we talked about
DVR. I don't think I got. I don't think they're playing it up there.
But we talked about the fact that a lot of teams probably didn't kick it full throttle every time because they wanted to see returns and try to practice against returns. How many are we going to see this year?
I would say, unless there's a penalty, every
85%.
No, I would say there never should be a ball that Josh Scobie does not kick out of the end zone.
We're talking 85% touchback rate.
And last year was 16%. That's a complete reversal.
That's all?
Yeah, it was 16% touchback last year.
I don't know if it was 85 because you're going to get cold
over
weather.
The top. But what was the percentage in the preseason?
32.
We'll probably jump to 85.
All right, here it is. I'll say 47%.
I think it's going to be over 50.
All credibility.
I mean, 99.
I really don't want to hear anything.
Hold on,
about
let me write it up
you.
Here on the board. 47%. Let me write it down.
I think it's going to be over 50, and I think it's over
50 as well.
It's a much more drastic effect than I actually thought it was going to be. I was wrong on that.
The unfortunate part of that is that takes away somewhat of an advantage that a team like the Jaguars have had with two guys like Montel Owens. And obviously, Kasim Osgood. I mean, because you don't have those two guys for one very important play that could happen, hopefully, 4, 5, 6 times in a ball game.
Matt Turk, new punter, new holder. Let's talk how he impacts the punting game. My perspective is he drives the ball so high into the air that it will play to Kasim Osgood's great strength of being down there waiting for it to land.
Yeah, as a gunner, he's going to have more time to get there, so it's going to help him out a little bit. But, you know, I just want to make sure that Matt Turk gets that punting at a consistent level, a little up and down in the preseason. Josh Scobie's got to find more consistency. What was he, 14 of 14 to start the year out last year?
Yeah, and then he missed a couple.
And then he ended up going like 6 of or 8 of 14, ended up like 70-something percent, which is not good enough. I mean, you got to be over 80%.
Right.
You know, so Josh has got to get better. What are you shaking your head at?
I mean,
my numbers.
You're going to go 87% again.
70, 85, 4, 70.
Truthfully, he was looking.
Not very good.
He was looking for me to, he was looking for me just, to give it to
I'm
him.
Waiting for you.
I was looking for Rain Man.
I was just waiting for you to land somewhere.
He was kind of throwing around there going, come on, Brian.
I'm the stat guy. It's my fault. I didn't have it there. He knows that I'll generally fill that one in. But
have that one ready on Sunday, Brian.
You bet. I'll have it ready on the way home tonight. Your thoughts real quick on special teams and how they impact this football team. Because remember now, if we're talking about run the ball, stop the run, field position becomes even more critical.
Well, field position's critical, and, you know, it hurts a little bit because this team had a great kickoff return game, and Deji Kareem, when he's healthy, is an explosive guy that can take it to the house. And so you lose yardage there. Those are the hidden yardage we always talk about. But I do like the punt game because I think you got some great coverage guys. I'm with Jeff. Matt Turk was a little bit inconsistent, especially early, but I thought he punted well the last two games. And so I feel confident there. And I think Russ Purnell is a very good special teams coach. So I always think we have the advantage going into the game on special teams, especially with Josh's big leg. He, at the end of the game, he shortens the field for you. He gives you an opportunity to win it. You don't have to go very far to get in position.
You might not believe this, but I was going to say it was 78.6%, and I wasn't quite sure of that 0.6, but it was. You were right on it, 78%. 78.6.
Take that, Baselli.
No, wait, you didn't say
78. I think didn't I say 78?
I heard 78.4. Yeah, right.
That's what I heard.
But on a final serious note, fans who are upset about the preseason – special teams is another area that is not automatically going to look very good or look like it's helping you very much during the preseason. It's, you know, you've got tons of guys on there who aren't really going to be on the team in a lot of cases. So it's hard to judge the area during preseason, and it's another reason the Jaguars probably will be better during the regular season than they were the last 4 weeks.
Did you guys look at the preseason rankings? I mean, when you talk about preseason, can you really get a gauge? Pittsburgh, 31st ranked defense.
Right.
It's hard to gauge preseason in its entirety by just looking at scoreboards and looking at rankings. You really got to look really at individual matchups and how coaches approach it from an X's and O's standpoint. And Tony Dungy and the Colts, I think, were a perfect example of that. Did they ever win a preseason game when
I think
Tony was there?
I mean, very occasional. They were something along the lines of, you know, 4-25 or something in the last, you know, few years I covered. I mean, they just didn't. It's one reason I had kind of a tough time, you know, while relating to fans who would get upset over the Jaguars losing preseason games, because I came from a team that, you know, just never emphasized it, never won in the preseason.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the show this evening, gentlemen. Safe travels to Baltimore this weekend.
Thank you. Please make sure you tweet during your break so I can follow how the game's going.
Now that I know that you'll be following, I definitely will. And Osh tweets and blogs the whole time.
Yeah, make sure you get some tweets out there, too.
I'll get going on that.
And make sure it's I need details. I need to know what is going on.
I'll just email.
But if you want to hear from Logs, you got to get the Jags app on your
call
phone.
Call me in commercial break.
Don't ask him to tweet. He's got a game to call. He can't be
only
tweeting.
He's a multitasker.
Everybody is these days. Thanks, fellas, and thanks to all of you for listening. Talk to you on Sunday morning with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Show at 10 o'clock. Have a great rest of your week.